afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm Dan Ayersman, your host for this week's show. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU, brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. Don't forget, you can find the show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. Today, my guests are Jim Zolik and Colin Shepard of the Schatz Energy Research Center. Jim Zolik is a senior research engineer who's been working at the center for almost 17 years. Colin's a research engineer at CERC and has been there for almost 4 years. Very much appreciate you guys being here. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
I wanted to begin just a brief overview of the Energy Center and the lab, as folks refer to it. Can you give us a brief overview of the mission and what the current projects you're working on right now?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. The Schatz Energy Research Center is a research center on campus here at Humboldt State. It's affiliated with the Environmental Resources Engineering Program. The center's been around for about 20 years now, started in 1989. With the solar hydrogen project up at Trinidad, which is still there. And our mission is to promote the use of clean and renewable energy. And, you know, we did a lot of work in the early years on hydrogen and fuel cells. And the whole reason we got into hydrogen and fuel cells is the relationship or the connection between hydrogen and fuel cells and renewable energy. That was what brought us to hydrogen and fuel cells. But in the last 5-10 years, we've expanded our areas of research quite a bit. We do work in biomass. We did a wind and hydro feasibility study for the Yurok tribe. We've got people doing off-grid lighting work in Africa now. India, some work on a grid share, kind of a smart, low-tech smart grid thing in Bhutan. So we have things going on internationally, nationally, and locally, as we'll be talking about today with the RESCO project and sort of local energy planning.
I just want to back up a little bit and just let our listeners know that this is going to be part one of a multi-part series on energy in Humboldt County and looking at Humboldt County's energy future. Getting into the discussion on the RESCO study and Schatz's role in that study, and you've been working on that project with RCEA and others. I was wondering if you could start to delve into the details on how that study came about and where the funding came from. And what you're looking at in that study.
Sure. So the Humboldt County RESCO study, as you called it, RESCO stands for Renewable Energy Secure Community, and it is a study that's been funded by the California Energy Commission, their peer program. We wrote a grant. I was the lead on writing the grant, a $200,000 grant from the California Energy Commission. As you said, we're partnered with the Redwood Coast Energy Authority that's based in Eureka. They're a joint powers authority made up of all the local municipalities, all the cities, the county, I think the water district as well. And they do a lot of energy efficiency work, but they're sort of the energy clearinghouse, energy planning group here in the county now. So we're partnered with them. We've been working on it for about 2.5 years now. We should be finishing it up a little bit later this year. And also partnered with us, PG&E is a participant in the project. They kicked in some in-kind cost share and have provided some technical support. Well, I'd say one other thing, that this sort of follows on to work that we did back around the 2005 timeframe when we were also working with RCEA and a couple of other local partners on the energy element for Humboldt County's general plan update. So that study back in 2005 really looked at the existing status of energy in Humboldt County. How much do we use? Where does it come from? Where does it go to? All that kind of stuff. As well as started to look in real general terms at what are our local renewable resources in the county. And that really, really poised us to write this grant for this RESCO project. And so we got funded and we've taken a real more in-depth look and really focused on assessing what our local resources are, what the cost of them is, what the benefits are, what kind of mix of resources might be best. Basically, really just looking at a lot of scenarios of what the opportunities are. And that's kind of what we're here to talk about today.
So just to backtrack a little bit, I mean, in order to look at our future, we need to assess where we are at currently. So we're wondering if you could give a little overview on where Humboldt County is right now in relation to other counties on the North Coast and what our sources of energy are and what we can be looking towards.
Humboldt's actually in a relatively unique position in the state, and that's because we're so remote. We're isolated by the mountain range to the east as well as to the south, that we have to produce a substantial fraction of our electricity locally. We also have to import almost all of our natural gas, 90% of it. We have to import all of our petroleum. and our petroleum all comes by barge through the Humboldt Bay. So in that respect, there's a lot of benefit locally to developing our own local resources. There's a lot of potential for it as well, because we have abundant natural resources here in Humboldt County. But we're in somewhat of a precarious position in terms of energy security, in terms of energy dependence. We're dependent upon imports, especially for natural gas and gasoline. But in terms of electricity, we already produce almost all of our electricity locally. There's some amount of import, but if you look at the transmission constraints in Humboldt County, our average electricity consumption is about 110, 115 megawatts of power that we need on average all the time. And the transmission into and out of the county is about 60 or 70 megawatts in size. So even if we wanted to import all of our electricity, we just couldn't. So because of that, we've got local generators. We have 3 local biomass power plants, and we have a small amount of hydropower capacity, an even smaller amount of photovoltaics installed in the county. And then we have the natural gas Humboldt Bay power plant. And so together, those provide essentially all of our electricity. There is still some times of the year when imports come in over the transmission system.
But at this point in time, PG&E power plant, the natural gas plant, that's where we get the bulk of our energy, is that correct?
Yeah, it's about 60%-ish. It sort of depends on how you count things up, whether or not the biomass power plants are running. Because the Blue Lake one in particular has been having some trouble. It hasn't been in operation very much in the last couple of years since it reopened. But anyway, yeah, over half of our electricity comes from natural gas. The natural gas that feeds that power plant comes over the mountains in a 12-inch pipeline, and it's a single pipeline. So, you know, you can imagine how susceptible we are to an earthquake that might sever the pipeline. Or they do have reserve fuel. It's a flex fuel power plant, so they can burn diesel fuel instead of the natural gas. And they have about a month of fuel in reserve. But, you know, if we really did have a large earthquake and that power plant had to go down, if the gas line was severed, the clock would be ticking and we would have to get relief in some form, and there would have to be massive curtailment of electricity use. There would be massive blackouts for a long time. So in terms of energy security, we are pretty precarious. We're highly dependent upon outside resources.
The natural gas pipeline actually is also, as Colin said, it's a 12-inch size pipeline, the main pipeline that comes into Humboldt County. And that at times has been constrained, so that we basically, what's happened in the past, in the wintertime, to meet our heating needs, we're all heating our homes mostly with natural gas. I mean, some people live off the natural gas grid and they've either got propane or a lot of people burn wood. But there's a lot of natural gas heating in certainly Arcata, Eureka, et cetera. And then the Humboldt Bay Power Plant burns natural gas to produce electricity. The old power plant was a lot less efficient than the one that they just built. But that new plant is very efficient and very well suited to renewable resources, which really kind of fits into this discussion we're having. But the old plant was much less efficient. And for natural gas, the priority for users is people that need heat. So what would happen when they couldn't bring in enough natural gas is people got the gas to use to heat their homes, but they couldn't continue to use as much gas at the power plant. And they would start to use basically the backup diesel fuel to run generators there because they couldn't run the natural gas plant full on because they couldn't use all that natural gas.
And of course, that brings up a whole list of other concerns regarding particulate and burning diesel.
Right. And there was probably some of these regulations on the old plant. But with the new plant, that was really scrutinized in terms of the number of hours they're allowed to run. Because, so as Colin said, they can run on diesel fuel, but they only do it when sort of in emergency situations. And they're limited to the number of hours per year they're supposed to be able to run on diesel fuel exactly for that reason, because of the emissions. The Air Board, you know, limits the amount they can run.
So looking at this 12-inch pipeline, looking at where we get our natural gas from, we're importing a lot of our, not necessarily the energy, we may be producing the energy locally, but as far as the resources that energy is derived from.
Right. The primary resource is natural gas, is the energy source, and so that's imported mostly. You know, 90% of it comes from out of the air.
And we see a lot of concerns with groundwater impacts from fracking, and we see the nation really picking up speed in terms of natural gas development. Where does that natural gas come from, and are these concerns being addressed here? It seems easy for us to be burning natural gas, not really thinking about the impacts in other areas, but it seems like there's a lot of other concerns throughout the U.S. where these are being developed.
Yeah, that's true. And I just look just yesterday or the day before at natural gas in the U.S. And basically, natural gas use has started to go up. Natural gas is certainly a much cleaner burning fuel than, say, burning coal or something like that or fuel oil. There's less greenhouse gas emissions. There's less particulates. In general, it's been looked at as sort of probably the best option in terms of being clean and efficient and so forth, and even in terms of climate change.
The best fossil fuel.
The best fossil fuel option. But I think that the new natural gas development is primarily coming from shale gas and is really, you know, related to the whole issue of fracking. And it's not something I know very much about, but clearly there's some issues there that people are taking a hard look at.
And biofuels, and it definitely seems like another discussion.
Right now, we get 2/3 of our energy is imported into the county in the form of natural gas and petroleum products. The other third is almost entirely biomass, and that's locally produced biomass, and that's in the form of waste from the timber industry. So it's mill waste, and to a lesser extent, waste from logging operations. And that sawdust and wood chips get burned in the local biomass power plants, and they're used to produce electricity. And there is a small amount as well of biomass that is going into our heating consumption as well. So we're about 1/3 petroleum, 1/3 natural gas, 1/3 biomass in terms of the primary energy resources. And then there's a small amount of hydropower and PV. And that, if I may, I just want to throw a couple of factoids that might help to put in perspective how much energy we consume in Humboldt County. As a county, we consume 200,000 gallons of gasoline every day. 200,000 gallons of gasoline every day. And we consume about 110,000 therms of natural gas every day. That's, in energy terms, equivalent to an additional 90,000 gallons of gasoline. So if you think about it in terms of petroleum products and gallons of gas, it's about 300,000 gallons, you know, every day that we're consuming. And that's what we are up against. And that's very high density, very cheap, extremely cheap for what you get out of it, sources of fuel. And I think that most people have a pretty good appreciation for the impacts, local impacts to other parts of the country and the parts of the world, as well as the global impacts from climate change that continuing on that path will incur. And so what this study is about is looking at our opportunities to displace that consumption and to see what can we do, what's it going to cost, what's the potential.
So given our current usage that we face today, looking at biomass, natural gas, and petroleum, obviously a lot of a very high percentage of that is not sustainable. It's not renewable. And a lot of these are sourced from places well outside of Humboldt County, places well outside the U.S. even. What methods are available to us? What opportunities are available to us today? I mean, Humboldt County has been a leader in solar or even in seeing micro hydro, but that's looking at some of the charts within some of the drafts that are coming out. It looks like that's just such a small amount, a drop in the bucket. Can you talk more about what we're looking at in the future if we are to start to make up for some of these non-sustainable energy sources?
Sure. And, you know, I'll just say one thing is that, I mean, Humboldt County has played a leadership role in terms of solar, both off-grid and now on-grid solar, actually. And it's very important. I mean, anything that people can do makes a difference and is really part of the solution. I think the perspective that we've come from with this study is really trying to look at the magnitude of the problem and trying to look for options and opportunities to make really big changes across the masses, you know, across the dominant paradigm, not just the you know, the people that are pushing the envelope, living off grid with the coolest setup you could think of. I mean, the more of them, the better. But that's not going to reach everybody. And so our perspective has really been, how do we reach the masses? Because that's what we need to do, both in Humboldt County, but throughout the country and throughout the world, if we're really going to get ourselves out of some of these predicaments that we're in. So, you know, basically, Humboldt County has, as Colin was talking about, biomass is a tremendous resource we have here, and we think there's potential for increasing the use of biomass, you know, basically waste product from the forest products industry and, you know, material from fuel reduction efforts and thinning and forest management. Obviously, that needs to be done in a sustainable fashion and in an environmentally responsible fashion. But we think that that is a, you know, that's certainly an option worth looking at. Wind is another renewable resource that we have quite a bit of. And I'm probably a number of the listeners are aware of the proposed Shell Wind project on Bear River Ridge up above Ferndale. There's been some controversy about that. We've actually come out and said that we think it's a really great opportunity that we should take a real serious look at, and we think that the benefits probably outweigh the potential negative impacts. So both onshore and offshore wind is a possibility. Offshore would be quite a bit more expensive. Wave energy is another one that we have a huge resource. PG&E had a Wave Connect project. They were looking at doing a small pilot project that's been shelved at this point. That technology is very immature at this point, so that's a much more of a wild card. But if that technology matures, that's a huge potential resource. To a lesser degree, a small run-of-the-river hydro. Hydro obviously can be done in some very environmentally terrible ways in terms of big dams, but we do have some small run-of-the-river, few megawatt, 2 to 5 megawatt type systems in Humboldt County currently, and we think there's opportunity for more of that. And then, more rooftop solar, solar electric, solar hot water. One interesting thing, Colin has been talking about all the natural gas and all the petroleum, the diesel and gasoline that gets imported. And the natural gas, part of it goes to generating electricity. The rest goes to heating our homes, used for process heat, whether it's drying lumber or creating recycled glass or, those sorts of things. And then the petroleum goes for transportation. And one possibility we have here is to develop the renewable resources that I just mentioned, generate renewable electricity, and then use that electricity to basically supplant the energy that we're getting from petroleum and natural gas. So we can convert our transportation fleet to electric vehicles. That's basically starting to happen now, especially in California, but throughout the country and throughout the world. So we could start basically reduce our use of petroleum for transportation by converting to electric vehicles and generating local renewable electricity. And the same thing in the natural gas sector for heating our homes. We can use electric heat pumps, which are very efficient devices. It's basically like a refrigerator or an air conditioner that's turned around and pumps the heat into your house. And again, that can be coupled with the development of local renewable electricity resources. So that's kind of a big picture. Those are some of the possibilities. And as we go further, we can get into more of the details.
Yeah. I'll just add, that's really the grand vision. And that's what we were trying to answer the question, can we do this? Is it feasible technically, economically? We think it is. And not only can we do it, but we can literally source all of our energy from local renewables for all of our energy uses. It's going to take a lot to get there, but it's technically feasible. And that was a big part of what we were trying to accomplish with our study, as well as to, get down into some of the details with each of the different technologies and the different opportunities and barriers as well.
In the study, you weren't looking at any specific projects. I mean, you mentioned Bear River Ridge, and obviously that's been something that's gotten a lot of attention. That's a really complicated, one of the most complicated issues, I feel, that we're facing right now. I'm just curious, there's a lot of options in front of us, looking at both the renewable energy sources as well as fossil fuels, the petroleum, natural gas. And it's interesting to me to see how many projects right now that we're looking at, even biomass, the Bear River Ridge project. I mean, these are complicated projects, and it seems like a lot of community involvement is needed to move those conversations forward. As far as the study is concerned, was there community involvement to develop the study? Who was involved, and what were the findings?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dan. And the study is ongoing. We're not done. So we actually, continue to welcome community involvement and public input. But I'll give you an idea of some of what's been done to date. So we basically put together a stakeholder group in an effort to reach out to the community and basically get people on board and engage them in this dialogue about Humboldt's energy future and what our options are and what people think is important and what people's values are, that kind of thing. We basically tried to reach out to a pretty broad spectrum of the local community, included the environmental community, but also business, economic development, labor. I know I'm missing some. I have a list here somewhere, but So
government,
yeah, regulatory agencies. We had two stakeholder meetings where over those two meetings we had 60 participants combined for the two meetings, and then we had an additional 19 participants that participated via a web-based survey, and then we actually about a year ago at the Planet Green conference we had 35 youth also participate in a stakeholder meeting with regards to this RESCO plan, and we got the youth's input on what they think we should be doing with our future.
What did they think? Just to
well, interestingly, they're so I'll give you a little bit of a flavor of what came out of that, and the youth actually the youth's vision and the community at large was pretty much along the same lines. The youth, one of the things I did hear from the youth that I didn't hear come up from other general populace was really a little more importance put on the future. You know, they were thinking further ahead than the rest of us. I think the rest of us are a little more short-sighted because, you know, they got more at stake in terms of the future. But so two of the key things we did with this stakeholder group is that they crafted a vision for Humboldt County's energy future. And basically it's, you know, it was in 2030 Humboldt County and then ... And it went on about what the energy future looks like and just talked about a number of different aspects. So that's something that'll show up in the strategic plan. And then the other thing they did is identified a list of criteria that they felt should be utilized to assess the different opportunities that are presented to us and different specific projects or generic types of opportunities, but probably more so specific projects. And the criteria, and this is where both the youth as well as the rest of the stakeholders were really on the same wavelength. The number one criteria that came out of it was environmental quality. And I wasn't surprised about that, but as I said, we really made an effort to not just bring the environmental community into this discussion, who we thought would be, you know, very interested and engaged with talking about renewable energy development for Humboldt County, but we really wanted to bring people from labor and economic development and other people, because we feel like to make this successful, we need large buy-in to really make this move forward. But still, environmental quality was the number one criteria. The next one was affordability, and both, you know, the cost of the resource and the ability for people, local people, to afford the resources, basically the energy they need, the electricity, et cetera, the fuel for their vehicles. The third was local participation and control. And then the fourth was economic impact. And quite a bit of work that we've done, and we can talk about this later, is focused on the jobs and economic impact that developing our local renewable resources will have on our local economy, as opposed to just, you know, importing petroleum, which employs a lot of people in a lot of other places. If we start developing local resources, we're creating local jobs and we're keeping local dollars in the local economy.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a longer list, but those were the top vote getters.
And of those, one thing that stands out to me, the two things, I think, looking at the economics, how much the energy costs, and when you look at the vast subsidies that we give to the petroleum industry or with natural gas development, I think that that's something we have been, I think you mentioned it before, we're living on cheap oil, we're cheap energy at this point, and I don't think that we look at how much we're paying for it versus what the actual costs are.
Right. There's also all the external costs that, you know, there's subsidies and then there's externalities, which, you know, like climate change,
right,
that when you buy a gallon of gasoline, you're not paying for the damage that you're doing to the climate.
Right.
And
right.
And if there were a carbon tax or something along those lines that internalized those costs, I think we'd put things on more of an even playing field, and these alternative things, alternative renewable energies, you know, I mean, already they're cost competitive in a lot of cases. If you start doing that, in a lot of cases, they may be better, you know, and I think that's certainly the case.
Right.
So
how much did affordability play into the study, and what would happen if we took that out of the equation? Or does the study cover how, if we took affordability out of the equation, what we'd actually be spending to go completely renewable?
We did look actually at what happens if cost is no object.
Mm-hmm.
So we did an experiment to say if our only goal is to minimize our greenhouse gas emissions, what would happen? Well, what would happen is you essentially, you know, maximize all of the renewables. You develop as much biomass and as much wave and wind and PV and hydro as you can. And even then, you still can't completely get rid of all of the greenhouse gas emissions, but you can really drive them mm-hmm. down. So we did play with that. And the answer is, if cost is not a problem, then the sky's the limit. Really, the real limits are political and social and environmental. Mm-hmm. You know, what can we do without laying waste to our local environment?
Mm-hmm.
But that said, we did quantify the costs of the individual technologies as best as we could. We put sort of a local price tag on each of them, and then we looked at the trade-offs between them and sort of compared them. But we think it's absolutely necessary in this kind of a study to prioritize cost or low-cost options, because those are the ones that are realistically going to be pursued
right.
first
sure.
in the world, because they're going to be more profitable. If it's a private business looking to develop an energy resource, it's going to be chosen first. If it's a public entity looking to provide as much service to the public as possible with the fewest amount of resources.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just throw out there, you know, I can kind of just line them up in order of increasing costs, but energy efficiency is the least cost option. And we did factor that into our study. We did consider it and look at it. After that, it's actually wind. In terms of low-cost ways of decreasing our greenhouse gas emissions, wind comes next, and hydro, they're about on the same level. Then it comes to the fuel switching, so electric vehicles, heat pumps, and then you get into biomass and wave, which get more and more expensive. Biomass is more expensive because the fuel is much more expensive mm-hmm. to procure. It's not free like mm-hmm. the wind or the sun is. And then wave, and then solar. And that's kind of the 30-second version of the sort of cost analysis that we did.
And I'll just say one other thing, but just to give you a flavor, if we looked at sort of, you know, the best case mix of all these different resources, we found that with about a 5% increase in cost, so about 5% over what we're currently paying for our energy cost, that we would be able to develop local renewable resources and realistically meet over 70% of our local electricity demand with local renewable energy resources and displace a quarter of our heating and a tenth of our transportation energy needs. Pretty substantial. I mean, if we were able to accomplish that in the next 10 or 15 years, that would be an amazing yeah. success. You know, I mean, that would be tremendous. It's possible. And, you know, I mean, gasoline is not cheap. So when you start converting your transportation sector to electric vehicles and you can using local renewable resources, the cost trade-off is pretty darn good.
Sure.
Natural gas is pretty cheap these days, and that's partly probably because of this all this fracking going on, and there's more natural gas available now domestically. But gasoline has stayed pretty high, and I don't think it's coming down. So mm-hmm. I think there certainly are tremendous opportunities. You know, I think Humboldt County has a unique opportunity here to really set an example. You know, as Colin said, we're in a unique situation because of how isolated we are. We're also in a unique situation because of the wealth of renewable resources we have. And our demand is relatively low because we don't have that much population up here. So we're in a prime position to be able to do this kind of work. And to me, it's like if we can't do it here, I don't know if they can do it anywhere. If we are able to start implementing some of this and start making headway into this stuff, we're really an example that other communities can look at and say, wow, look what those guys are doing. Hey, we can do that here too. And that's what needs to happen is some communities, and there are other communities around the country and around the state that are stepping out and really trying to make bold moves. And we'd like to see that happen here.
And we can talk more about that on the next show 1 month from now. Thank you very much for being here. Where can people go to find out more information on the report and on what you guys are doing?
Okay. Yeah. So there's two places they can go. The Redwood Coast Energy Authority is one of our partners, redwoodenergy.org. They have a lot of really good information, but they do have a RESCO page on their website. And then the Schatz Energy Research Center, schatzlab.org. We also have a RESCO page. Our strategic plan is in the works right now, and a draft will be public and will be available on both of those websites probably in the next month or so.
Excellent. Great. Well, thank you both for being here very much.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
This has been the EcoNews Report. My name is Dan Ayersman, and I've been your host for the past half hour. My guests have been Jim Zolik and Colin Shepard of the Schatz Energy Research Center. You can find more information at the Schatz website, as well as the Redwood Coast Energy Authority's website. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the public affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org, where these programs will be archived for 2 weeks after they've aired. Previous shows are posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at www.urnec.org. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 826-6089. The EcoNews Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 right here on KHSU for the EcoNews Report.